Hello and welcome to Sports Report Podcast, episode 39. I'm Billy, and today we got some good stuff coming in with the NFL training camp. Already started for a couple teams, so we'll get into some of that stuff. A lot of news coming out about Aaron Rodgers. Currently in the NBA, we got the NBA Finals just wrapped up. Bucks winning in six. That was a bit of a surprise for me, so we'll get into a little bit of that along with some of the stuff that's coming up with the draft and all the rumors leading up to that. Also, the MLB and the NHL with Seattle Kraken having their expansion draft. So let's just get straight into the NFL, starting out with Dolphins corner Xavien Howard. So Xavien Howard, one of the league leaders in interceptions this past season, overall one of the best corners in the NFL, you know, an underrated guy, not really out there, I'd say. Not super vocal, so there's not a ton of people that put him into that top corner conversation if you're not really keyed into the NFL. But again, the guy's a ball hawk, really the leader of that Dolphins secondary, a stronghold there. He signed an extension a couple years ago, and now, there, as we talked about on the last podcast, there's been some contract extension talks. Howard wants a new contract even after signing a long-term extension. So he kind of screwed up, and now he's trying to get out of that. Usually players, you know, wait until their last year and then decide to hold out or petition for a new contract, that type of stuff. But Xavien jumped the gun a little bit here and decided that he's worth more than what they're paying him, which is still a pretty good salary. I still think he's top 10 paid in terms of cornerbacks in the NFL, really where he should be. But he thinks he deserves some more. So several teams are interested right now in Xavien. It looks like he could be traded because I don't think the Dolphins are really tolerating this as a team. For me, I wouldn't be tolerating it. I mean, you gave him an extension. It's fair. It's a fair deal. It's not like a Gilmore situation, as I've been saying, where going into your last season, you're like heavily underpaid in terms of your position for that year. Xavien's not underpaid. He's pretty much in the ballpark of where he should be already, but he wants more money. That's him. I don't necessarily agree with it, but you know, that's just where he's at right now. And several teams are interested, and I think Xavien realizes that other teams are willing to pay him if he can teams need secondary help in the NFL. It's one of the key parts of football. And if there's a top tier guy out there who can leverage himself, if your team that's not going to pay you, like if the Dolphins aren't going to pay him, somebody else is, because there's just a lot of need right now for the position. And one of the teams is the Cowboys. Someone photoshopped Xavien Howard, as you know, every single time a trade rumor comes up, you get a Photoshop. Xavien Howard actively liked the post of him in a Cowboys uniform. Cowboys desperately needing secondary help ever since Byron Jones left for Miami. In fact, they really haven't been able to kind of fill that gap in the secondary. Trayvon Diggs, they had drafted last year, he struggled a little bit, and they really haven't been able to fill that defense. And Xavien Howard would be perfect player to fill that void with. And you know, the Cowboys, as we all know, Cowboys roster has been stacked for a couple years now on paper, but they never truly get it done on the field. And you know, part of that is because of their failure of coaching with Jason Garrett, who was never really that good as a coach, and now Mike McCarthy, who, as we saw last year, really in Green Bay was carried by Rodgers a little bit and the team around him, and even in some of those seasons struggled. But Dallas insisted on, you know, trusting that one Super Bowl win, and bringing him in to try to do something for the Cowboys. He hasn't been able to do that. So Xavien Howard, I think, could propel the Cowboys defense into something better, but they definitely need a lot more work than just that. Their linebacker core has, you know, it's gotten better with Jalen Smith. Van Der Esch is still there. You got Micah Parsons there as well. So it's a pretty good linebacker core. Their defensive line is very minimal right now. That's kind of a problem, along with their edge rushers. And their secondary, as we know, there's just not much to write home about there. I believe they signed Malik Hooker as a safety. So they're adding to it. Having Hooker and Xavien Howard back there would be pretty good. I'm surprised Malik Hooker spent such a long time on the market. It's kind of surprising for a player of that caliber. And, you know, he was good in Indianapolis. He was a good prospect coming out. You know, he's been a good player. So surprised that he lasted so long there, but a good pickup by Dallas. And if they can get Xavien Howard, you know, if I'm Dallas, I'd be willing to give up a first for Xavien, because I think they have a good roster. They have a good enough roster, especially to win the NFC East. It's just they need to get over the coaching problem. And, you know, in Green Bay, they could do it. They got over McCarthy. They won in spite of him as the coach. I think Dallas can do that. They have the roster, of course, to do that. CeeDee Lamb's going to take a big step up this year, probably. So, you know, maybe even throw up Michael Gallup in there, because, you know, the Cowboys offense needs to free up touches for Lamb and all that. You know, it's a very stacked core with Cooper, Lamb, and Gallup. So maybe throw Gallup over to a team that, you know, needs some wide receiver help, such as the Dolphins. So, you know, help Tua out. So it could be a win-win for both sides in this deal. Xavien Howard's not going to go for anything less than a first-round pick. And I expect the Cowboys be willing to do that, as they've done that before for like guys like Amari Cooper. And I think that's something that I'd certainly entertain if I were them, and I'd be willing to do. So I'd certainly trade for Xavien Howard if I was the Cowboys front office right now. Now into Deshaun Watson. You know, the Watson front has been pretty quiet these past few, I'd say for the past like 2 months, there really hasn't been any word coming out about him. But now, you know, there's been some reports about him connected to the Eagles, which I don't love a ton, because I still have hope in Jalen Hurts for that team. But at the same time, I don't really see them going much anywhere this upcoming season. So Watson has been like linked to the Eagles by Adam Schefter and other reports that, you know, once Houston's ready to trade him and, you know, all this legal stuff is cleared up, Watson will have, you know, the Eagles will be the suitor for Deshaun Watson, and they're ready to bring him in, basically, is what's going on. And, you know, if I was the Eagles, I wouldn't touch it just yet, but certainly it's an intriguing option for them. Watson is actually expected at camp right now, because he wants to avoid the $50,000 fines. You know, I've been saying that I thought Watson would just completely hold out, because, you know, he has the financial stability to be able to do that. I guess he doesn't want to do that. He's still vocal about wanting a trade. He's basically just showing up to training camp so he doesn't get fined. He can keep his money. He's basically just there because he has to. And, you know, if he shows up and he just doesn't do anything, they can't fine him for not doing anything, you know, because he's there. So it looks like he's just going to go to training camp and do nothing. Now, the Texans front office, you know, with a willing suitor like the Eagles, if you were them, if the Eagles are a willing suitor, you'd expect that they know what the price is going to be, which is going to be an astronomical price for a guy like Deshaun Watson, who's so young and so good already. You know, a Pro Bowl level caliber quarterback who, you know, can great athletically, great through the air, great arm power, makes great reads, you know, just overall a great quarterback in the NFL. You know, that's going to be like three first round picks, most likely. First round picks, along with probably some additional players and other really incentives for the Texans in return. So if I was the Texans, you know, Watson's value isn't like, it's a quarterback. It's a top tier quarterback, and those are hard to come by. So you're going to get a ton of assets pretty much no matter what, no matter when you trade him, like right now. So if I'm the Texans right now, I'm getting him out of there at this point, because especially because we don't even know how the legal stuff is going to play out. But if the Eagles are willing to take him on now, the dude's coming to camp. I didn't even think the Texans were going to, or the NFL, for matter of fact, was going to let Watson even place his foot on a field. So they're letting him play right now. So why are we not trading him? Especially because the Texans prepared pretty much to play without him. They got like a million quarterbacks on their roster. They drafted Davis Mills in the second round. They know that they're going to move on from Watson. So why is he still on the damn roster? It really makes no sense at all. Because teams are going to want Watson in there for training camp. Training camp is literally going on right now. So they kind of missed their window where they could probably get top level compensation for Deshaun Watson. You know, usually you'd want to deal him probably around the draft is where the ideal trade would have been, and they missed that window. They missed when he first demanded. They missed pretty much the whole offseason. The ideal spot to trade Deshaun Watson, they just completely missed it. And, you know, I've ragged on the Texans front office for numerous reasons this whole entire offseason, just because they've been such a dumpster fire, whether it's because Culley said that Watson's going to be their starting quarterback, and they just kept insisting and insisting, and they wouldn't trade him. And then they went out and they drafted Davis Mills, who in the second round, so that's an indication, first of all, that Watson is not going to be on the roster, is not their long-term quarterback. And as you know, if you watch the scouting board at all, Davis Mills isn't a good quarterback. He doesn't do anything special. The only selling point that you have on Mills is that he has a good football mind, and really in college he didn't never put it to use. He interceptions, and he was just very inconsistent, and there was no like athletic ability that was like off the wall, and there's just nothing special about him. You know, he's just an average quarterback. He's like Ryan Mallett, just not as good in college, you know. That's probably what he is in the NFL. There's nothing special with him. So the Texans haven't managed this situation well at all. You know, the top two worst front offices right now is the ones with the quarterback situations, because when you don't have your quarterback happy, you messed up, especially when it's a really, really good quarterback. And when the quarterback isn't happy and starts causing problems, you know, he's the center of the team. That's when things start to go wrong. And the top two front offices right now, at least for me, that are complete dumpster fires. The worst front offices in the NFL is, one, the Houston Texans, just taken over by Nick Caserio and hasn't started well at all. And then number two, Aaron Rodgers' team, the Green Bay Packers, who haven't been able to keep Rodgers happy at all. And let's get into some of that. So Rodgers turned down reportedly a huge extension. So really it wasn't about the money. He just didn't want to play in Green Bay. That's pretty much the message that we've been getting, is that he's pissed off at Gutekunst. There's just no trust there with him in the front office. Rodgers presumably is just pissed off that they haven't been able to build anything around him. You know, one of the best quarterbacks in the NFL. They haven't been able to build anything substantial around him. They haven't really given him any wide receiver help. They just drafted Amari Rodgers. That was their first real kind of effort to surround him with anything worthwhile. You know, they gave him A.J. Dillon, but they didn't need a running back. They already had Jamal Williams and Aaron Jones. So they didn't give him really much to work with, and he still made it work, you know, made the NFC Championship and put them in a position where they could possibly go to the Super Bowl. They ended up not doing that because Tom Brady, even on a torn MCL, was still amazing as a quarterback. And that Bucks team is still built, like, amazingly built by Jason Light. A good front office to compare to the Green Bay dumpster fire, if we can say. So there was the rumors about Rodgers and all that stuff, and this kind of dumpster fire that's been happening, they heated up a little bit this week when Aaron Rodgers, well, first of all, Devontae Adams reports came out that he has cut off his contract extension talks that have been ongoing through this offseason. And people kind of connected this and they're like, okay, Rodgers wants out. Now Adams has completely cut off his contract extension talks going into a year, into his last year. So it looks like he's going to test the waters. He doesn't want to play without Aaron Rodgers. And then we get to at night, Adams and Rodgers both posted a picture from The Last Dance of Scottie Pippen and Michael Jordan. So people tried to decipher this. I, for one, you know, most people said this is them saying, okay, this is our last season. We're going to see how it goes. And we'll go from there. I personally still thought Roger, because there has been reports that Rodgers, sports books, the betting companies, you know, they usually have a step ahead. Some of them were expecting Rodgers to retire next week. Now it's not next week, so we can't necessarily conclude that. But there's been reports coming out since that have refuted it. So, you know, right now we're pretty set in stone that we think Rodgers will come back. But I thought initially, before those reports came out, that, okay, this is Adams' last season because he is under contract. I don't think he's going to hold out. He's a wide receiver. You know, he's probably just going to try to ball out with Jordan Love and, you know, just impress so he can get a big contract. You know what I mean? The usual in a contract year. And I expected Rodgers, because he has been so set in stone this whole entire offseason, that he's just not going to play for the Packers, that I expected, okay, he's just probably going to do his he's going to hold out or do a retirement or something and then come back eventually until they trade him. Or when they trade him, he'll come back. And that was kind of his. But it looks like, at least according to Ian Rappaport, that Rodgers plans to play next season, and that it looks like those pictures are probably saying, okay, Rodgers' last season in Green Bay, hopefully for him, and then Adams' last season in Green Bay. So the Packers aren't in a good spot here, because, you know, you're announcing to the world, you know, Tom Brady was subtle with it somewhat. You know, there is still mystery if he wasn't going to come back or not, when, you know, he did the voidable years at the start of the season, but he never came out and, like, by posting that, you're basically saying, yeah, we're gone after this year, or we're gone pretty soon. So it's not a great thing to, like, show people before the season, show your opponents that you really don't want to play for this team. You're just kind of being forced to by your contract. But it looks like the Packers are going to let this play out. Robert Tonyan, their tight end, also posted a picture of Dennis Rodman. So it looks like he might want out. And Za'Darius Smith also is having contract struggles. So, like, every single player on the Packers roster right now just doesn't want to play on the team, like, at all. So Green Bay is not doing well. Not doing well at all. And it looks like next season could be very bad, very bad. And especially for a young guy like Jordan Love, who's going to have to be playing, there just won't be a lot of really weapons for him to use in the future with all these guys leaving. So the front office really just hasn't handled the situation well, really, at all. So we'll look to see how this thing pans out. I do not think that Aaron Rodgers is coming out of the NFC to go to the Super Bowl this year. If I were the Packers, I'd still go ahead and, you know, get rid of these guys. It's tough to pull the plug, but I just don't see them, you know, as a winning franchise. They're going to try. They will try to make a winning effort here and go and try to win a Super Bowl. But realistically, I don't see them doing it. I do not see them doing it. And when you can get a ton of assets for not only Aaron Rodgers, but Devontae Adams and Robert Tonyan and Za'Darius Smith, guys that are all pretty valuable in terms of trades that you can get firsts for a lot of them. Certainly for Rodgers and certainly for Devontae. When you want to build a good future, you know, you got to make sacrifices. And I think that this might be a sacrifice that they need to make. They're not willing to make, but they need to make. Because if not, Jordan Love will not be set up for success with this team at all. Losing really the key guys that make up this team. So, you know, we'll see there. Cam Akers, the running back for the Los Angeles Rams, my Super Bowl favorite this upcoming season, which has been no secret. I've said this on multiple times. Cam Akers, you know, great running back. I just think the Rams are stacked from top to bottom, defense to offense to special teams. I mean, all over the place. And with the addition of Matthew Stafford, they actually have a quarterback that can put it in the air. I mean, the dude is insane. You know, he's been held back by Detroit and their offense for a long time, and even so has put up insane numbers there. The injury problems have been there for Stafford, but has been behind the best line in Detroit, now getting a somewhat decent line in Los Angeles, but certainly a lot more weapons with Cooper Kupp, Robert Woods, Akers, and DeSean Jackson's coming in. They drafted Tutu Atwell. They're just surrounding the guy with weapons, and defense is also there. You know, as we always know, Jalen Ramsey and Aaron Donald, the two best at their positions on the same team. So the Rams are really just, and Sean McVay. Can't forget Sean McVay. I'm a huge McVay fan. I believe in his program. And, you know, it's worked. It hasn't worked to a Super Bowl yet, but it worked with Jared Goff to get him to a Super Bowl. So that's a lot for a coach, a huge accomplishment. Now we have Matthew Stafford coming in, and it should be a very interesting season. I like them a lot, but this one is going to hurt a ton for them. Is Cam Akers, who had a great rookie season last year, looked like he could be a Pro Bowl level running back. He tore his Achilles this offseason, this past week, and will pretty much be out for this whole entire season. So the Rams' run game is going to not be as good anymore. There's still some guys in the market like Le'Veon Bell that they could go out and possibly get. If I were them right now, I'd go looking for some type of running back that's available. Maybe a Sony Michel from New England, who they've been shopping around a little bit. Just any form. You gotta get some reinforcements in there, especially because this is really a season where they are looking to win, and this blows them back a lot. I don't even know if they're my Super Bowl favorite anymore without Cam Akers. They got Henderson back there now, who should be a good running back. He showed flashes last year, but not nearly as consistent as Cam Akers was, and not nearly as kind of like, you know, he's more of a power back, not really that fast, agile. You know, Akers has his power on him too, but Akers more fast and agile, I'd say, than a Daryl Henderson. But I still think the Rams have a lot of potential here. They just need to go find a running back. That's really what they got to do now without Cam Akers. So we'll see how this one plays out, but it's not looking good for the Rams right now. I hope that they figure this out, because I think the Rams are going to be one of the most, if not the most entertaining teams in the NFL this year. And I was really excited to go watch them, but it looks like it could go a little bit downhill now without Akers on the squad. And we'll see what happens there. You know, Stafford still has years left on his contract and still has great years of football left. So it's not the be-all, end-all if they don't win this year. But certainly it's a little bit of a letdown for Rams fans and really just football fans all over the country that have been looking forward to watching a fun, you know, a fun football team. You know, the NFC West, such a good division right now. And it's just kind of a letdown. Now on to the NBA. So Bradley Beal, he has been seeking a trade now, reportedly after, you know, he was removed from Team USA due to an injury. And he's been seeking a trade, not happy in Washington. 1 year left on his contract currently, so he will enter free agency next year if he is not traded, so most likely will be gone. So the Wizards are in a position here where they're not going to win the NBA Finals next year. I can say with all certainty they will not win the NBA Finals next year. They're in a position where trading Bradley Beal is pretty much the only option for them, because Beal, if he's looking for a trade right now, is not going to go for an extension. He's going to want to trade right now so he can get a full supermax from the team that he's going to. And there's been a lot of interest from certain teams, like the Warriors. We've been talking about the Warriors these past few episodes and how they just really want to move those pick 7 and pick 14. And Beal would make a lot of sense here. Pairing him up with Curry and moving Klay to the 3, that could make a lot of sense for sure. Also, the Celtics have been a big name here. As a Celtics fan, I'm not willing to part with Jaylen Brown to get Bradley Beal. Brown is a good scorer and a all defensive team level defender. Beal is undersized, of course, great scoring, but he's older and not nearly as good defensively as a Jaylen Brown. So I wouldn't be willing to do that. Personally, Marcus Smart, as much as I love his effort, his defensive effort and all that, he is disposable. His three-point percentage has been low his whole career. His shooting percentage, inconsistent. He doesn't take great shots usually. If you ever watch Marcus Smart play, he plays with a fire to him, but he doesn't take a heat check really. You know what I mean? He misses a ton of shots. He'll just keep shooting and chucking him up. It's very ugly. And he's improved his shot form a little bit, but it's never been really improved. But for some reason in the NBA, he still has a little bit of value. So I think he could be some form of value to the Wizards, you know, getting him and then using him as a trade piece later, because they'll be in a rebuilding stage. No really point to use him, but you know, he has value behind him. So shipping him off would be ideal. Also, Robert Williams, I wouldn't want to part ways with him, but if you're going to make this Beal deal go through, and you know, the Celtics need to take a risk at some point. Because sticking with the current roster right now, as we saw last season, just simply isn't going to work. And, you know, I'm not going to say time's running out, but, you know, contracts only last for so long. And if Jaylen Brown and Jason Tatum can't figure it out with the current roster, if they're just going to stand pat, contracts eventually run out. And if you don't got a championship, you haven't made a finals appearance,
they're probably going to leave. That's what's happened with most superstars that, you know, just can't get over the hump with the front what the front office is doing. And now with Danny Ainge more of a pick guy, grow kind of organically, and wasn't really making a ton of trades during his time. Major trades, I should say, during the past 10 years. With Stevens there, you expect that maybe there'll be some changes and that he can pull a trigger on trades. So ideally, Marcus Smart is going to be going to have to be in the trade. Robert Williams, one of the best shot blockers right now, if he can stay healthy, he's going to have to be in the trade. Young guys like Peyton Pritchard, Aaron Nesmith, and maybe, you know, just some other younger guys that don't hold a lot of value, but, you know, they're young, so they have potential. So you could throw in guys like Carson Edwards or Tremont Waters or Grant Williams, even if they wanted that for some reason. So, you know, you can do a lot with that. Also, picks. Picks in the NBA, especially if, you know, if we're going to trade for Bradley Beal, that's a big three. That's a team that's going to be in contention for the finals almost every single year, no matter what, because the NBA is about star power. And, you know, if you have star players, you're going to be able to win games. That's just simply how it is. International basketball, as we've seen, is completely different. It's not about star power. That's why the Team USA loses. The NBA, why they thrive in the NBA is because it's based off of star power. The role players aren't going to have as big of an impact as stars. If you have stars, example, Brooklyn Nets, you're going to win games. You're going to have insane stat lines, and you're going to be able to win games. So, also examples, Miami Heat, when they had the big three, the Celtics, when they had the big three, any big super team, Oklahoma City Thunder, I mean, back in 2016, the Warriors, all that stuff. When you have star power, you win games. It's just how it works. I don't care if you don't have a good center. The Miami Heat, example, Joel Anthony was their center. They sucked down there. They were horrible. Yet they still won. Why? They had star power. Some of these things, you need really good players, and then sometimes the role players just don't really matter as much. It's a tough pill to swallow for most people, and there's outliers. There are outliers. But this Celtics team, as it currently is not that outlier. You need to acquire Bradley Beal. So, as I was saying, I got a little off track there, but picks. Picks in the NBA, if we're going to have Bradley Beal on the Celtics, their picks are going to be in the late 20s every single year for the next however long, let's say 5 years. I'd be willing to give the Wizards our first round picks for like the next 7 years. Like any amount. Because if you're not in the top 10, generally in the NBA, especially with the Celtics, their track record as of late, besides for Robert Williams, you're not going to find much at all once you get out of the lottery. First round picks just aren't that valuable in the NBA anymore. So if you have to give up a ton of first round picks to avoid trading Jaylen Brown in a Bradley Beal trade, go for it. Absolutely. Danny Ainge isn't there anymore, so he valued draft picks to an astronomical range. He valued them a ton. So now that he's not there, you can pretty much do whatever you want with those picks. Ideally for me, you're going to be a winning team if you get Beal. You're in a winning mindset. Win now. You should, avoiding injuries, of course, you should be fine for the next few years. So trading those picks to the Wizards, completely fine, especially because you're going to have to outbid other teams that might not be as good and might have might be more willing to give up star players. You're going to have to put in extra goodies, per se, for the Washington Wizards. And one of those would have to be just a ton of draft picks at this point, because you're running out of assets once you get past Williams and Smart that you want to dispose of. So we'll see what happens there. You know, Beal and Tatum have been friends for pretty much their whole lives. They've known each other their whole lives. So it'll be interesting to see there, but we'll see there. JaVale McGee, he was selected for Team USA along with Keldon Johnson to replace Bradley Beal and Kevin Love. Interesting choices, seeing as that Trae Young, Julius Randle, and all those guys were on the table. Greg Popovich, I think it's time to talk about his legacy. You know, as we know, really just proclaimed as the greatest coach of all time, kind of recklessly. Tim Duncan, you know, I think Greg Popovich is a great coach, a Hall of Fame coach, of course, one of the best coaches of all time, top five at least. But recklessly called the top coach of all time. You know, Phil Jackson was triangle offense and, you know, played, he did have great players like Kobe and MJ and Scottie and all that and Shaq. But still, he won a ton of rings as well. And, you know, more than Pop. Pop had Duncan that whole time and Kawhi. And then once, you know, as of late, really, once he lost his star players, you know, he has a decent team. DeJounte Murray, Keldon Johnson, as I just said, you know, decent team. But hasn't been able, it's DeMar DeRozan, of course. He hasn't been able to play super, super well with those guys. And Team USA is shown even worse. We're going to come back in a second. We're going to take a quick break, and we'll be back with this Greg Popovich talk. So now back to some of that Greg Popovich talk. Team USA, as we know, has lost the two exhibition games, and now finally getting into the Olympics. They lost 83-76 versus France. Evan Fournier poured on 27 points. None of the Team USA players were over 20. All pretty, you know, even scoring for them. Nothing special. And, you know, I just want to compare, you know, Popovich, he's deflecting questions in the media and all this stuff, and really hasn't been a great leader or coach for Team USA. Nothing like Coach K certainly was. And Team USA really, you know, it's a bunch of superstars. The problem with Team USA and international playing an international ball, you know, all these superstars are getting outplayed by role players in the NBA while they're playing an international, right? All these role players suddenly get better. And one, that's because the game is more physical. Game is more physical and it's team oriented more than just one superstar. And when you force a ton of superstars onto the international stage on the same team, you know, all really want the ball in their hands. They want to force fouls like every single possession. It's not going to go well for them because it's a physical game and it's a team game. And, you know, last night I was up pretty late at 1 in the morning watching the Luka Doncic Slovenia game. And he scored 48 points, right? 48 was what Luka Doncic did. 48 points. 6 3-pointers made and 11 rebounds. That's the most he's ever scored. He scored way, he hasn't scored that much in the NBA. He said it's harder to score an international ball, you know, in Europe, it was harder for him to score, which was true for him, at least until now, because now he's balling. That was his Olympic debut. And Slovenia, you know, he's really the only player that you can recognize on that Slovenian team. They went on to beat Argentina 118-100. Luka putting on an absolute show there. And the thing that sets Slovenia and the USA apart is that Slovenia, they play together. Luka may have scored 48, but if you watch the game, Luka's distributing. He's letting all these guys get his touches, get their touches. And they can play well, too. It kind of reminds me of Ja Morant at Murray State. When you watched him in March Madness, or any game, to be honest, those guys weren't getting draft looks, right? Besides for Ja. But they could all hold their own on the court. It's kind of the same with the Slovenia team. I could not name one of these other guys that Luka plays with on Slovenia. They're none of them are in the NBA. They are EuroLeague players, and they're good there. But they could all hold their own, and they all play team-oriented basketball. They've all been together for a while now. International ball, you're playing with your teammates a little bit more if you're not in the NBA. And they just had great chemistry, good coaching and all this stuff. And that's just really the difference between USA and Slovenia. Slovenia played together and USA played by themselves. They tried to, make their own type of plays, USA does. And they don't, it's just not team ball. And that's what they need to learn to do. They need to learn to play more like Luka and Slovenia. And to be honest, after watching this, I wouldn't be surprised. You know, this is Slovenia's first Olympic appearance as a basketball team. And what's horrible and disgusting for Team USA is that at this point, I wouldn't be surprised if Slovenia can, if they ever do play Team USA, will beat Team USA. You know, I think they could medal. I think Slovenia could medal with Luka and how their team just plays. And I think USA might not even medal this year. I don't think it means a lot to them. It certainly means a lot to Slovenia. Argentina is a great team on the international stage as well. They won the gold in 2004 when USA had their slump. Speaking of, shout out to Luis Scola, who's still playing at 41. I didn't even know the guy was still playing. He hasn't played in the NBA since 2017, but he's still playing international ball. So crazy there. You know, these guys have commitments to their country. And they take it seriously, more seriously than I think Team USA does. And I think that's just another problem. And they just don't want to play together. And, you know, that's a problem for Team USA. Slovenia, very entertaining to watch. USA, not so much. USA is very clunky. Slovenia's smooth. And, you know, they play basketball the way it should be played, I think. It looks like that Greg Popovich's old offenses, where it was a lot of ball movement and, you know, not a ton of flashy plays, but good shooting and you know, just good drawn-up plays. And Slovenia is playing better than Team USA. As of right now, Slovenia looks like, and France. France, too, with Evan Fournier. Gershon Yabusele outplayed Jason Tatum. Outshot him. Tatum was like 3 for 11. I think Gershon was 3 for 4. Gershon with 6. I believe Tatum might have had a little bit more, but he was in the same ballpark as Gershon. And Gershon, as we know, isn't in the NBA. He got cut by the Celtics, was a bench warmer, as Tatum was the star. And now you flip it in the international stage, and Gershon Yabusele outplays Jason Tatum. It's just, it's pretty sad. It is what it is. And USA not looking good at all. If I advise you anything while watching Olympic basketball, is to watch teams like France and Slovenia. Don't watch teams like the USA. They're not good. They're boring. And there's just nothing entertaining about it. It's just kind of depressing to watch if you're from the US. Or even if you're not, it's bad basketball is what it is. It's bad basketball. The Pelicans are reportedly eyeing Kyle Lowry along with a few other teams. And the Lakers are having a fever dream right now about Kyle Lowry and DeMar DeRozan for some reason. They think that the cap just, you know, the cap doesn't exist, I guess, for them. And they think that somehow they can get Kyle Lowry and DeMar DeRozan, which is insane. DeMar DeRozan's realistic for them? Sure. You know, if they get rid of Schroeder. Sure, he's realistic. And if you just want Lowry, that's realistic. But the two of them seems like utterly ridiculous for the Lakers. It seems like the front office of the Lakers has turned into the Twitter fans for the Lakers, who are always insane, think that they can get anything that they possibly want. You know, I'm not even worried about this blowing up in my face about Lowry and DeRozan signing with the Lakers, because it's so utterly ridiculous that that could ever possibly happen, that it's just not going to. It's not going to. To any Lakers fan who thinks Kyle Lowry and DeMar DeRozan will both sign with the Los Angeles Lakers, you are insane. Because money exists. The cap exists. And Kyle Lowry and DeRozan, especially Lowry, he's in the last few years of his career, they're going to want to get paid. And DeRozan, this might even be his last big contract. So you're not going to pay both of them the max, or both of them even over $20 million. That it's just not possible. You know, the cap exists. You got to realize the cap exists. This isn't baseball where it's just a luxury tax and you go off your budget, right? It's not that. You got a cap. You got a cap. And you got to work with that. And you can't just willy-nilly sign everybody. It's not how it works. So hopefully the Lakers figure that out and get it in their mind somewhat quick. But, you know, that is what it is, I guess. The Bucks won the NBA Finals in 6 games, their second championship in their history. Giannis Antetokounmpo, he is, you know, solidifying himself really as a top 30 NBA player of all time. 50 points in game 6, 14 rebounds and 2 rebounds. Jrue Holiday almost had a triple-double, 12 points, 11 assists, and a lockdown defense from Jrue Holiday as well. He's been outstanding. I underestimated his addition to this team when they first got him. I regret it. Jrue Holiday has been amazing. Chris Paul did play well for the Suns. I said earlier when I made my predictions, I said Suns in 6, so the opposite of what happened. I said that, you know, Chris Paul has to step up. He has to keep playing well. Earlier in the playoffs, he didn't really have a ton of impact in terms of points, is what I'd say. But, you know, game 6, he had 26 points. Still pretty good there. The team performed. DeAndre Ayton not so hot in that last game. And, you know, 4 straight losses for them, so they choked it a little bit. It certainly did, but the Bucks just outperformed them. Game 5, Giannis had 32-9-5, Middleton with 29-5-7, and Holiday had 27-13-4. So they're just really playing like a big three. You know, when you view the Bucks, you view Giannis as the big, big star, and then Middleton and Holiday is kind of not really, at least when I view them, I never really viewed them as kind of like a big three, right? Because it's Giannis and then it's the other guys. I viewed them more as kind of just co-stars in a way. But now, when you look at these stat lines, and they're putting up against a good Suns team that kind of has a big three with Ayton, Booker, and Paul, at least you view them at least more as a big three. And I thought they had more depth, too, with Bridges, Cam Johnson, Jay Crowder, Cameron Payne, guys like that. But the Bucks just outplayed them. You know, Brook Lopez, he had his shining moments in the playoffs. And certainly, I think the Bucks deserve this. Giannis should get a ton of credit. Jrue Holiday, so much respect for Jrue Holiday. I think out of this whole entire series, Jrue Holiday is who I got the most respect for. Because, you know, Giannis and Milton, I already had a ton of respect for them. And this series certainly enhanced that for me, especially for Giannis. But Jrue Holiday, up to this point, you know, I viewed him as a good point guard. As solid point guard, but I never really viewed him as kind of that deciding factor. And that's really what he is, because he was their upgrade, and he's what got them kind of to this championship level. And my respect for Jrue Holiday has kind of gone through the roof. So, you know, just respect to Jrue Holiday. He is the guy that really kind of, and Giannis is just step up the past four games, is what got them to the point that they're at. And I think Jrue Holiday should get a ton of credit. He doesn't get nearly enough recognition as he definitely should. You know, great offensive player, great distributor. He works on the boards as a point guard, and he's a great defensive player. Outstanding defensive player. So, you know, all the respect in the world to them, and congrats to the Bucks for winning the NBA championship. They're certainly going to be in the mix next year as well. So, some quick things before we end the episode. Shohei Ohtani, one of the best players in the best player in baseball right now. I'll say it. He is the best player in baseball. He signed a Fanatics deal, exclusive with Fanatics, this past week. And what's special about this is that Shohei Ohtani is currently leading all of sports in the world in jersey sales, which is crazy for a baseball player, right? Because Mike Trout was the face of the MLB for these, I'd say, like, these past, this the past decade. So ever since he really came into the league, because he's been amazing. He's been the face of the league. And he was kind of the guy that the MLB was trying to market. And, you know, you never really got much out of him. And he wasn't like a face of the league like LeBron or Tom Brady or something that's very vocal and kind of gets the league on the map. That's why the MLB was struggling, because it wasn't connecting with young audiences. It wasn't getting people excited. It wasn't making people talk. But there was no face that you could directly point to and say, hey, this is the guy that is bringing attention to the MLB, and so on and so forth. Shohei Ohtani, despite what Stephen A. Smith said and all that, despite being a foreign-born player, is now the leading jersey sale person in the world out of all sports, not just baseball, all of sports. This guy is the best marketing the MLB has gotten in the past decade or maybe even farther back. And you got him playing great, being a face of the league. And you got Fernando Tatis also, who is a great face of the league, very vocal. You got young stars coming up right now that are going to carry this league. And such a bright future. Shohei Ohtani right now is that the beam of light for the MLB. The beam of light. That guy is the face of sports right now. If you go by jersey sales, that is the face of sports, a baseball player. Something I thought I wouldn't say for a long time. I thought I'd maybe never even say that again, by the way baseball was going. But Shohei Ohtani, on not even that good of a team, is the face of baseball and currently the face of sports. People like this guy. People like this guy. It doesn't matter if he's foreign. It doesn't matter if he plays baseball. It doesn't matter at all. None of that matters. He's marketable, and he's getting sales. This Fanatics deal and these numbers solidifies it. People believe in this guy, and they know that he will get sales. Shohei Ohtani will get sales. And how can you not love this guy? He pitches amazing, almost at a Cy Young level, and he's going to be the American League MVP if not for Vladimir Guerrero Jr., another young face of the league, vocal guy. The future of the MLB last year, I was saying the future of the MLB is horrible, and it was. But this season has been a glimmer of hope. Shohei Ohtani at the forefront of that. So it'll be interesting to see really the future of the MLB, and I think they're headed in the right direction. And if we're going by jersey sales, the MLB right now, great position for success. And Shohei Ohtani, honestly, love Shohei Ohtani. There's nothing that you can hate about the guy. And I just wish him the uttermost success. And, you know, he's having great success right now. And I'm excited to see what he can do in the league. And hopefully he keeps hitting dingers like he has been. And now into the last topic, which is the NHL and the Seattle Kraken, the new expansion team. A little confused why they didn't take Carey Price. Now, the cap hit, you know, as we know, Montreal freed up Carey Price, their goalie, who they just rode to a Stanley Cup. He had a little bit of an injury problem and a $10 million cap hit, which is a lot in the NHL. But as an expansion team, right, you got a ton of cap space. Don't you want to have kind of that face of the team to have a little bit of ticket sales and all that stuff? Because I think Carey Price in Seattle would have been a draw like no other for the Kraken. And I would have loved to see it. I'm sure the fans of Seattle would have loved to see it. I think they're a little bit let down about it. I am. I know that Habs fans are happy. But I guess we'll never be able to know about Carey Price on the Kraken. I was surprised that they freed him up, but that's really all I have to say about the expansion draft. I tweeted a little bit about it during it. The ESPN had a pretty good production for it, I thought. You know, Sean Kemp was funny, and Marshawn Lynch. But it was overall, I'm excited for the NHL getting the Kraken. Hopefully they can, you know, with the NHL, the expansion drafts, they set you up for pretty good. It was shown a lot, like pretty well with the Vegas team, with the Golden Knights. So, you know, making the Stanley Cup. Now, we'll see if the Kraken can do that. I don't think they're going to be able to do that. But certainly they could be in contention for a playoff spot or something else. We will see there. So that's just going to be it for Sports Report Podcast episode 39. Thank you guys so much for listening. Follow us on social media at Sports Report Podcast on Instagram. On Twitter, you can follow us at Sports Report Po 1. You can follow me on Twitter at Sports Rep Billy. You can follow Alejandro at SRP Alejandro. You can also follow Aiden at SRP Aden, A-D-E-N. You follow him there. Yeah, guys, just thank you so much for listening. Couldn't do this without you guys. Also, search us up on YouTube for some clips and highlights. That's going to be Sports Report Podcast. Thank you guys so much for listening. We will be back very soon for episode 40. I can't believe that it's been that long. Alejandro and Aiden will be back for that one, and we will be looking just a little bit different. So we'll keep you updated on that. So see you guys later. Peace.